This is the Powerlifting America podcast, and today we're talking with the undefeated M4 63 kilo world champion, best lifter, and owner of all four world records in her class, Shelly Stettner, who is just 3 weeks out from defending her title at PA Nats. Shelly did her first competition at age 68, and she's put 40 kilos on her total in just 3 years since. But don't let her kindness fool you. She is extremely competitive and wants all the smoke with her competitors, even to the point of putting the M3s on notice that she wants to out-total them as an M4. This is a spicy one. But before we start, don't forget that we have three big events coming up in the next 5 weeks with Bench World starting May 20 in South Africa, Sub Junior, Junior Masters, and Equip National starting June 2nd in Arizona, and Classic Open World starting in June 11th in Malta. They will all be streamed live, and we'll post the links on our Instagram story at powerlifting_America, so make sure you're following us there. Thank you to SBD and Eleiko for their continued partnership with Powerlifting America. If you're looking to compete in drug tested powerlifting, whether you're just starting out or you want to compete with the best in the world, make sure you go to powerlifting-america.com and become a member. Now, let's get to the interview with the queen of the M4s, Shelly Stettner. What is up? I've got the M4 63 kilo undefeated world champion and best lifter, Shelly Stettner. How's it going, Shelly?
That's good.
And also with me, we've got co-host Julia Williams, 63 kilo open lifter. So we got two of the strongest 63 kilos in the world here. How's it going, Julia?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
So Shelly, how's everything going with you? Did you know you're undefeated in powerlifting?
Well, the pool of competition for me is small. So unfortunately, but hopefully with me being out there, that will change. Certainly in years coming up, it's going to change, and totally. I'll probably be bumped off of this perch, as people get older. Yeah.
Well, definitely. You're very modest. But you are the best M4 63 kilo in the world, and you're the best lifter in all of the world championships, in the M4 division. So, hold on to that title and brag about it while you can, sure. Yes. I looked up your your records on Goodlift, and you're actually the world record holder for all three disciplines and the total. So just a complete dominant force in the M4s in the 63 kilo weight class.
Yeah. It's surprising. I'm probably the most surprised of anybody. So
a couple of things about recent developments in powerlifting. Did you watch Sheffield?
Absolutely. Well, most of it. Yeah. Most of it I did. Women for sure, and the 63 kilogram and as much of the others as I could. Yeah.
Yeah. So who specifically were you, really looking to watch at Sheffield?
Oh gosh. Evie. Oh my goodness. She was incredible. That just can't be topped.
Yeah. It's been the talk of powerlifting for sure. Since Sheffield, did she give you any ideas about cutting or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. No. At my age, I can't. Matter of fact, I'm even bulked up now, 2 pounds.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I noticed earlier before we started recording, your arms are looking jacked. So yeah, you definitely look like you're ready to go, into season.
Hopefully. It's been a rough one. It's since Worlds, it's been difficult. I've encountered some obstacles, and the rules change, and I had to redo my bench. My bench set up at a time when I also developed a bicep tendonitis. It was rough. It really was. So
for sure. I've been following your prep, and it's been tough, but it seems like, how are you feeling now? Are you ready to go? Are you 100%?
I am good now. I'm not real sure how it happened, other than I just made myself keep moving. And in some respects, the bench rule change and the bicep tendonitis turned out to be kind of a good thing for me, because it forced me to change my whole bench setup in a way that I think is much better for me now. It actually turned into a good thing because I have really long arms, mm-hmm. and I was basically close grip benching all this time. Wow. So I also the setup, I couldn't put my feet on the bench anymore, which seems like a minor thing, but for me, it was a big deal.
Oh, it was a big deal for everyone, I believe, who puts their feet on the bench.
It was rough. It was rough. I had times of serious doubt.
Oh, wow.
Especially with the bicep thing. I had never had anything, you know, around in my shoulder like that before. And that was pretty scary. But I had to find a way to bench that wasn't painful, and widening my grip was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it also helped with the bench rule a little bit.
I'm not sure. I think just playing with it, it was hard. Somehow I figured out a way to set up, because I do a self lift off all the time. So I figured out a way to do it that didn't hurt. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work for me. So now I think we're good. It's just that I lost time. I lost time mm-hmm. training the bench. So it's kind of been a catch-up, a catch-up deal for me. So
yeah, I know how that is.
Yeah.
Bench takes a hit quick too if you lose time and you have any kind of interruptions in your frequency or anything like that. Bench is usually the first one to be affected by stuff like that. So, but Meg Scanlon was kind of saying the same thing, that when she redid her bench, now she's doing like a sink touch.
Yes,
she's saying the same thing. I think that eventually she's going to be stronger than she was before. Obviously, with her range of motion before was a lot less, so that's going to take time. But same thing, like retooling and fixing everything and kind of starting from scratch again seems to have been good for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, powerlifting is just so interesting because it's for me, it's just been kind of a path of figuring out for my body how to lift these weights and just having to change things up. I had a lot of trouble with the deadlift. I went from conventional, to sumo because, I had a glute problem, which turned out to be a proximal hamstring tendinopathy, actually, is what it was. And I couldn't, I just had a sense that if I continued to conventional deadlift, I was going to hurt myself in a serious way, which I did not want to do. Mm-hmm. So I switched to sumo. The cheater deadlift, which I will never in my life call it that again, because that thing is hard.
Yeah.
Sumo is not easy. Oh my goodness. I got Solana Lewis to help me with the form, with the bench. Some with the bench, but mostly with the sumo deadlift. And then I got to a point with the sumo where, again, I was having problems with that glute, area. And I'm now back to conventional. But it's real interesting because I didn't seem to lose strength when I switched back over. And my form is very different. And it seems stronger. I don't know how that happened. But that's okay.
Just time lifting, probably, the more time lifting, you're getting stronger all the time. And again, it's like that when you have the injuries come about, it sometimes has to refocus on technique and stuff like this, be more aware of things, for sure. And so, that's, I mean, Usually it's the other way though, where people do more conventional and then their sumo gets stronger. So that's pretty interesting that sumo actually helped build up your conventional.
It did.
Is everything good now? Are you healthy with the hamstrings and everything now?
I am. It's, you know, it gets tired. The hamstring will get tired, but, it's not a pain like it was before. So it's not worrying me. And it's at this point, it's just really kind of fine tuning conventional again, because it's a little bit of a different lift for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just interesting stuff, really.
That's one of the really cool things about powerlifting is it's like this constant evolution, and it's a puzzle, and you're trying to figure out little pieces. And just when you think you got one thing fixed, something else happens, or an injury happens, or a rule changes, and you got to rethink things. And then usually I think like Mike T talks about that a lot, where it's just like athlete focus while training often can be like the most important variable. And it doesn't really matter you're doing conventional, sumo, whatever it is, having that injury kind of can just get you to be more focused, more in tune with your training, like more aware of what's going on of your techniques and things like that. And then you see gains, you know, come out of that, that increased attention.
I mean, I knew I had to keep moving. I had to keep lifting. So it forced me to find ways around these issues. And I don't know, somehow it worked, you know, so I'm excited. I feel strong right now. And, you know, I'm all ready for Raw Nats for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of which, go ahead, Julia.
Oh no, you mentioned Solana, Lewis. She actually does my nutrition coaching. It's powerlifting in a small world. Do you, have someone doing that? You mentioned you bulked up a little bit, you know, 2 pounds.
I have Nathan Payton, who he's probably most known for coaching strongman people, you know, like Martins, Lysis, you know, the world's strongest man people, Brian Shaw. He's a nutritionist for those guys, but also, you know, powerlifters and bodybuilders and all these kind of things. So I've been working with him for several years now, and he's amazing. He's just amazing. So
what's his nickname?
The Snack Daddy.
I love it. I saw that on your Instagram story the other day.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so hilarious. I wanted to somehow incorporate it.
I lifted it from one of those strong men. He had a t-shirt made for Nathan, the Snack Daddy. So he's, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. And so he's getting you bulked up like those big strong men, I see.
Oh,
so
well, that's cool. You know, we're talking 2 pounds. I'm probably about 2 pounds heavier now going into this meet than I've been before going into meets. So
will you have to cut? We have to do like a water cut or anything?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I noticed you weigh in, you tend to, you're in a 63 kilo weight class, but you tend to weigh in normally around 60 kilos as per open powerlifting. So yeah, you're still well within
the range. Yeah, I'm not too worried about it really. And then the closer I get, the more anxious I get, and I kind of naturally scale back on some of what I'm eating too. So.
Stress burn calories.
I do.
Yeah, I'm the same way, where like it just leading into a meet, somehow I just lose weight and end up coming in super underweight. So it's cool that you're doing that and that you're putting on mass at your age, especially, you know, that's like always a question of like, at what age do you stop putting on mass and muscle mass and stuff like that? And you've really proven you can keep doing it well into your 70s. And that's just really great. Do you think that you're going to eventually try to fill all the way up to like 64, 65 and then cut going into a meet?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I, those days of kind of yo-yo dieting and, you know, gaining weight, losing weight way in the past. I don't like right now I'm okay. You know, I feel fine, but I can't imagine any heavier. I would be uncomfortable.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Do you find is that something like, do you have to, is it hard for you to gain weight if you want to?
You know, all we did was my diet is like so regimented now. It's just, it's fuel really all for me. I don't, it's the whole, my whole approach to food has just totally changed. Mm-hmm. So, in order to like, when I went through like the injuries, we increased my protein from 4 ounces per, you know, per serving to 5. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's really all that we did. Everything else is basically the same. He gives me the diet. I don't do macros and carbs and all that kind of stuff. Nathan just tells me what to eat, when to eat. And that's cool.
That's nice. That's how I would need to do it.
Yeah. I
actually, can't. If the snack daddy can just send me my meals directly, right, that would probably be the easiest.
Yeah. Well, there's companies that do that, Paul.
I know. my wife won't let me spend any more money on powerlifting. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah.
If I started being like, oh yeah, I need to get this meal plan in the mail, it'd be over.
Yeah.
But yeah, Julia, and feel free to jump in if you have any questions, anything like that. So yeah, we were kind of talking a little bit about, you know, current events, things that are happening. And in general, are you a fan of powerlifting? Do you watch powerlifting meets and stuff and pay attention to who's doing what and that kind of thing?
I do. You know, I think I do. I, you know, follow along. I've got certain people that I follow. And certainly the 63 kilogram females, I follow them, you know, for some reason. And then the masters lifters, absolutely. So, yeah. And every once in a while, as you've probably noticed, I'll get a bug in my bonnet and get all upset that, you know, masters lifters are kind of dissed a little bit. And you know, I just don't understand that. So there's certain certain other groups that are very, you know, promote masters lifters, and which is great. But I think, you know, there's a lot that don't, you know, think that, you know, open lifting is where it's at. And once you're done with that, then you're done with powerlifting, which I don't agree with, obviously. Yeah.
No, it's one of the things that makes our sport so amazing, that you can do it for so long and that we have a diverse, I was just talking about this with Austin last night. It's just, we have such a diversity of people, everything from super young sub juniors to M4s to people from all different walks of life, people who start super young, people who start when they're in their older age, you know, everything in between. And so that's what's cool about it. And we all share the same platform, and gravity treats us all equally, no matter what. So it's true. It's a really cool sport in that way. Julia, were you going to say something?
Along those lines, you know, we want to promote masters lifting and all that. Do you have any, are there any rivalries within the masters worlds or anything like that that you want to go into?
Yeah, let's get some sound bites of Shelly talking shit to other countries.
I wish, you know, there's just, unfortunately, I'm like my own competition at this point. I'm looking for somebody to come out of the woodwork, and it could certainly happen, you know, but I'll admit sometimes I will look at the M3s. Mm-hmm. And try to find somebody in the M3s, and it's like, okay, well, I'm going to beat her, you know. Yeah. And not that it happens, but you know, I can get that kind of mindset just because I'm kind of a naturally competitive person, and it would be really cool to have.
Yeah. You're basically the Taylor Atwood of Masters powerlifting, undefeated, right. Never lose, best hair, everything. And
I hope he's gonna be all right. Yeah.
What's
that? I think he's injured right now too. I hope he's gonna be all right. But even injured, he's amazing.
Yeah. He's seems like he's doing great. Seems like training's going okay. He's fired up for sure. But yeah, I mean, you're basically the untouchable. If anyone thinks they're close to getting to Shelly, you don't even know. You're not even close. You have no idea. Is that the Taylor quote? I botched it, but he said something like that before about the 74s. But so also there was a little bit of smoke in there for anyone who wants it. The M3s are on notice. Shelly's coming for you in the 63s. So Suzanne LaForge,
she's incredible. I tried to talk some shit with her, but she she's strong.
She's so nice too. So it's hard to like really, but that's fun. It, like you said, it's about having like a fun rivalry that you can push each other. I mean, certainly no M3 wants to get beat by an M4. Like that's got to fuel them. That's got to fuel them. They see you in the rearview mirror getting closer and closer.
That's so right.
That's and really fun. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I love it though. Yep. There's no competition in the world for me. I'm my own competition. These are the, well, that's awesome. You have a great attitude about it. So people that you look up to in powerlifting that you're a fan of, who are some people that you look up to and that, you know, you like to watch and pay attention to?
Well, my all-time hero is Sam Calhoun. Mm-hmm. I don't know. She's just, she's a real mensch, you know. Mm-hmm, she really is. So I look up to her. Jen Thompson is just, I don't understand. She's one of the superheroes. She's amazing. There's many others. Susie Gary is another one.
So Susie will be in Scottsdale
for
Raw Nationals, and she'll be competing actually as well. And she'll also be coaching a bunch of lifters as well. Scottsdale, these Nationals are going to be fun. We've got like a lot of superstars there in the Masters, especially on the women's side.
Yeah. Well, Sam, Sam Calhoun's going to be my game day coach. Her team's going to be there. She's got several Masters lifters. It's going to be fun. It really is.
Yeah. This meet, I tell everyone, this is the most fun of the year. We've got all the age divisions. We've got the equipped, Nationals all in one day as well. And that brings its own level of excitement and everything with the equipped stuff. This is the best meet of the year. I was just talking like we're going to keep trying to feature this meet and make it bigger and spread it out across like maybe even more days so that everyone can kind of get the spotlight a little bit more on each platform and stuff like that. Because it's this year it'll be two platforms and all of the Raw lifting will be done in 2 days. We're thinking about in the future, you know, just little ways to tweak it to kind of feature some of the stars a little bit more and things like that. So
yeah, that's good.
It'll be fun and exciting. Julia, do you have any questions for her?
Is there anyone you're really looking forward to meeting or in Nationals? I mean, obviously Sam Calhoun and all her team. And I know she's been coaching Masters for a while because back, you know, a few years ago, she did a pro meet and then she turned around the next day and coached a bunch of Masters. So, but is there anyone else you're looking forward to meeting there in person that you haven't?
Yeah, just friends that I've made already, you know, at previous meets. Sam was, I think this was maybe the same meet that you were just mentioned. I think it was the Arnold.
Probably, yeah.
Not this past year, but the year before, I guess. I don't know, I forget. But that was the first meet I didn't have a handler. I was very nervous because, well, the Arnold was a big meet. And I lift in pounds. I don't do, mm-hmm. I don't do conversions well, you know, for kilos. And I didn't, you know, I didn't have anybody to help me out. And I was nervous about it. And I figured, I'll just wing it, you know, I'll just figure this out somehow. And as I was going into the warm-up room, I was talking with somebody and of course mentioned this. I didn't have a handler and I didn't have anybody to help me out. I was nervous about it. And then there was this little voice from the corner. I think she was like sitting there, you know, waiting for her lifters at the door or something. I don't know. It's a little voice said, well, I'll help you. And it was Sam Calhoun. Wow. And she just, yeah, she took me and just, I mean, she didn't know who I'm, you know, and folded me into her team. And it was just amazing. You know, what a wonderful person. You know, for her to do that. And so, yeah.
That's a great origin story for like you meeting Sam Calhoun. Did you know who she was at that time?
You know, at that, I think, yes, I did, but I don't know if it connected immediately. Yeah.
So. Like you kind of knew who she was, but you kind of were like, found out later, like, wow, she's like one of the best in the world.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And you're in around the same weight class. Like Sam's kind of an enigma. She was a 63 forever. And you know, that was like her weight class and she owned it in the US for a while. And then now she's like all over different weight classes. Like there's not, it's like, there are no weight classes in some of the competitions that she's doing now and stuff. But so she's kind of going all over the place. It's really interesting. She's got a really active following on social media with her steps and her, all her diet stuff and her questions of the day. She's just a great person to have in the sport. She's doing a lot to push the sport forward.
She is. Yeah. And her team is just growing. So, yeah.
So I don't think, were you on, I vaguely remember hearing you on another podcast, but I wanted, yeah, you were you on Solana's podcast?
I was.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. But I still, I don't remember about the details of your background. So let's go through like kind of some of your background story. Like take us back, like where are you from? You know, where'd you go to school? That kind of stuff. And then when did you get into lifting?
Well, I grew up in Lubbock, Texas.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that. Now you don't have like a Southern accent.
No, no. Well, I was born in Ohio and then the family moved there. So,
okay.
So yeah, Lubbock, Texas. And I was never an athlete by any means. You know, I've always been kind of sort of active, you know, as when I was a child. You know, we took tap, ballet, and acrobats. It was called acrobats back then, not gymnastics. Okay. So, you know, we would do that. And that was also back in the day when in school, there was always PE. Yeah. So we had that. And, you know, over the years, there would be different fitness fads that would come up. And, you know, I probably, you know, dabbled in most of them, you know, for varying lengths of time. Mm-hmm. Nothing really took, you know, I mean, back in the late 70s, early 80s, when running and jogging got started, I started with that. There was, I went through a yoga phase, you know, and sampled different kinds of yoga. Okay. I think there was some Pilates thrown in there. I mean, and nothing for very long at all.
Yeah.
There was a time also that I had a personal trainer at one of the, you know, powerhouse gyms, and you know, she would take me and lead me around to the different machines, which it was fun. I enjoyed it, but you know, also it's never really went anywhere.
Yeah.
So this was back in 2016, round about the time that I was going to turn 65 years old. And this coincided at this time where I realized I was losing muscle mass. I mean, I somehow it had been happening and I hadn't even noticed it. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, around about that time, I noticed it. And it's, you know, it's called sarcopenia. It's a natural process of aging. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was kind of alarming. I mean, I've never been a super muscular person at all. Yeah. But when you start really losing that, it's noticeable. So around about that time at work, I work in an emergency room. I'm a psychiatrist, and it's a this is a psychiatric part of a general inner city, you know, emergency room, a large emergency room. So, and I worked with one of the ER docs that I've worked with, had worked with for like 15 years. I went to discuss a case with him or whatever, and he told me that he was going to be leaving. This was Jonathan Sullivan, Dr. Sullivan, Sully, we call
him.
Okay. Yeah. And he, I was like, well, where the hell are you going to go? What are you going to do? And he told me that he was going to, had this gym, and he was going to, you know, training older people. And I was really intrigued by that. And I had no idea that he was into all that. So I asked him if I could come over and, you know, see what he does. And he was like, sure. And he specifically trains older people. He was at that time, writing a book together with, Andy Baker and part of Starting Strength, publishing. They were publishing it called The Barbell Prescription. And that was round about the time they were just getting ready to publish it. It hadn't been a thing yet. Cool. So I went over to Sully's gym to see what he was doing. And, there was this, tiny woman older than me lifting these heavy weights and these barbells. I had never seen anything like that before. I mean, dumbbells, and I didn't even know what a barbell was. I mean, this was something that happened in gyms that men did that, you know, who knows what that was all about. It wasn't something I was familiar with. So it was just amazing to me that this tiny woman older than me was so strong and could do this. And I was like, well, I want to try this. So that's where I started. It was April 2016. Yeah. And two times a week, started with just the barbell. And he taught me the basics.
And was it powerlifting or was it like Olympic lifting stuff?
It was squat, bench, overhead press, and deadlift.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the starting strength, right? Exactly. Julia, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
It's the whole starting strength sunk with a linear progression. That's how I got started.
Wow, that's cool. And because you happened to have a colleague that was into it and you were curious, you asked a question or two, and then next thing you know, you're best lifter at Worlds.
And it was right there in Sully's gym that, that I got bit by the barbell bug. Who knew? I didn't know that was my sport. But I just really took to it. It was very challenging. It was very difficult. It's very hard for, because I was, I wouldn't even say I was deconditioned because I had never been conditioned, really. I had never realized strength certainly in any degree like this. So yeah, that's how I got started.
And what do you think about it? It was what hooked you. Was it seeing physical changes in your body, or was it just like, you know, the feeling of accomplishment after a hard workout? Or what was it that you really seemed to hook you into powerlifting?
You know, Paul, this is probably going to seem strange, but you know, I had never really felt strong. There's some challenge there that just, you know, I was hooked. Mm-hmm. You know, I just really was. I had never, it was just something that I had never experienced like that before.
And do you think like it felt like empowering to feel strong like that after?
Oh yeah. You know, and you could, you know, I would see, I kept a logbook. I have my original, you know, I have all my logbooks all on paper, the composition notebooks, the old fashioned kind. I write everything down.
I got one sitting right over here.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm on my second one, and pretty soon I'm going to be on my third. Mm-hmm. But the first one is, you know, with Sully's handwriting in it. And that's, I started with the barbell, just that, which was very heavy, very difficult. There were points in time where I didn't think I was ever going to be able to continue doing the squatting or whatever. I would have back pains and this would hurt and that would hurt. And
yeah,
but little by little, and with the logbook, you know, you're able to see I was making progress. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's like, it just grabs hold of you, or at least me. And, you know, it was just something that, I guess, again, I was in competition with myself. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to best it. You know, I wanted to master this. So
that's, I was hooked. Yeah, that's one of the things that a lot of people say about the sport that really get them into it is like in the early days, especially just trying to get PRs in the gym, and that, you know, you kind of start to get this addiction to just being a little stronger than you were last week, and yes, then just keep doing that week after week after week. And then the next thing you know, like, you know, you're like, maybe I should start competing and, you know, going in and competing at nationals and stuff like that. So is that, when did you make the decision to start, go ahead and do a competition?
Well, there was somebody, I don't know who, I learned that that there were competitions. I didn't know, you know, at first it started out with starting strength lifting competitions with the, mm-hmm. It was squat, overhead press, and deadlift. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I caught wind of it, that there was these competitions. And again, I somehow researched it, of course, because it's just my nature. And I found somebody, a woman who was doing this, and it was like, oh, well, okay, I need to beat her if I'm going to do this. And so the comment was, I had made the comment about wanting to get into one of these competitions. And someone said, well, you're not going to win. And that did it. And I was like, oh, really? Okay, well, we'll see about that. I may not win right away, but I will win. So.
Oh, wow. So that person is eating their words these days, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
That's amazing. You're just a very competitive person. I mean, like right out from the gate, you know, you're like eyeing up the competition and thinking about trying to win. So like, you're like the Terminator. We're gonna call you the Shelly the Terminator. Like, watch that's out. Right. If she gets you in her sights, she's coming for you. That's really awesome. Julie, did you want to add it or ask anything? I just want to make sure to check in with you and see if you have any questions. I don't want to dominate the whole conversation here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I'm working with women who are 40 to 70, trying to train them for strength. So I thought that that was really cool, your story about how you started. Do you have any maybe words for women who want to get started, but for whatever reason don't, or are, you know, shy about maybe training under a barbell?
You know, it's, I do think it's important to find someone to teach you the basics, who also has experience training older persons. It, because not that we're special snowflakes in any particular way, but you know, I think the older you get, the more issues you have, and also oftentimes, like for certainly women of my generation, you know, you just didn't get into stuff like this. So it's really kind of starting from square one, which is one thing if you're in your 30s, but if you're in your 60s, it's kind of a different ballgame. So there might be mobility issues, there might be all kinds of other, you know, health issues or things that have been accumulated, old injuries that can flare up. So I think it probably would be a good idea to find someone with some experience training older people. And and be patient. You know, it's all about consistency and effort. You have to hang in there with it, even when you get to points in time when you feel like you know, you can't go on or you can't do it. I had one woman send me a message, and she, you know, I've had a lot of questions. Well, how do you get so strong? So I'm doing a kind of a vlog on my Instagram because I've had people ask me, you know, how do you get so strong? So I thought, well, I'll just put it out there. You know, they can see what I do. So I had a message sent to me from one woman who was getting started. And she asked me, well, how do you, you know, she was having trouble lifting the weights, you know, the weights to put on the barbell.
Yeah.
I've been there. You know, it's like picking up a 45 pound plate is not an easy thing to do if you've never done it before. Even a 45 pound barbell is, you know, a huge challenge in the beginning. You have to start with a smaller, like a, you know, a 30 pound bar or something, a smaller bar. You know, for me, it was the same thing. And, you know, I just, you just do it. You know, I wouldn't allow people to help me. I wanted to do it on my own because I figured, you know, this will also help make me strong by picking up these, you know, these, you know, loading up the bar myself, you know, and not having somebody do it for me. So yeah, it's just really starting from square one. And I think it takes a special kind of coach to be able to coach someone who's older too, that's really going to be starting, you know, at a square one when you're older. So
was it, do you think for especially women of your age, that there's a widely held belief that like just women shouldn't do strength training or shouldn't lift weights, stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many people have, like, you know, you're going to hurt yourself, you're going to hurt your back, you can't, you know, I bought into it too. And you have to, somehow I just, you know, had to override all that. I mean, I still get nervous about it from time to time, but not like I used to.
Yeah.
But even, I mean, even navigating around a gym was something. I mean, like I mentioned, I had a personal trainer. Well, she would lead me around. It wasn't like I could walk into a gym and know what to do. Not at all. Yeah. So, So yeah, I had to learn all of that. The pandemic was good for me. that was the silver lining, because you know I had to set up a gym in my home, and you know, I had to figure out how to do all this stuff on my own, whether I wanted to or not. So
yeah, that's a very inspiring story. I mean, you're a big inspiration for women, especially, and of all people of your age. And it's what I love is just how fiery you are, like, and so competitive. I think it's probably a common like misconception that as you get older, you just like are less competitive, or like these competitive urges and things just like go away at some age. But I'm happy to see that like it doesn't, and that you're, you know, you can still get stronger if you haven't started. Even if you have been lifting for a long time, you can still get stronger. And those competitive urges never go away. So no, like you're going to be competing with people for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, even for people who have been lifting, I mean, lifting at different decades in your life is going to be a different experience. It's not always going to be the same. You know, someone's not going to be able to lift exactly what they lifted when they were in their 20s. But at each stage, it's going to be a new challenge. And that's what's so cool about powerlifting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's cool to have someone like yourself out here that's kind of paving the way and showing, you know, women especially, you know, that they can do this. And that some of the preconceived ideas that maybe we've had in past generations and things like that, that's all out the window now. And I think the younger generation, we're seeing, obviously you see it in the sub juniors in Powerlifting America and in Worlds and stuff. And you definitely see it in the open division where women are dominating the sport. I mean, Sheffield women broke way more world records than the men did. Yep. It's super competitive. So, you know, people like you, and then, you know, in every age category down the line, there's inspiring women who are doing it and leading the way. So I think it's the future. Well,
there's men too. There's John LaFleur. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who I think now is in PA. Isn't
yeah.
he?
He's come over. Yep.
Yeah.
He's good. Coming. He's coming to Scottsdale.
I was very happy to see that.
Yeah.
But there's others. I mean, Anthony Harris, you know,
yep.
Ricks.
Dave Ricks. Yep.
Dave Ricks. I mean, there's older folks out there, you know, mm-hmm. but.
And we have a Dave Ricks figure on the come up on the women's side with Kimberly Walford, where she'll probably be totaling numbers that can be open, competitive in the open, as far as we can see, until she's M2, M3, something like that. She'll still be competitive, just like Dave Ricks.
She's amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Dave Ricks is always a big inspiration for people too. Like, you know, I remember when he was competing against Russ Orhi, and it was like he was leading in squat, and that was the year I think that Russ had missed his first two squats or something like this, and Dave Ricks was in first place, you know, and this is just like 2 years ago. So it was very inspiring for people who didn't start doing powerlifting as sub juniors, or even maybe if they don't start lifting till they're in their 30s and stuff, looking at people like yourself and John and these people, it's very inspiring. Gives us all hope.
Yeah. Sure. Well, they've been at it for a long time, then they're continuing to get strong and to set records. And it's very inspiring.
And do you feel just like being strong in general, that throughout your everyday life, that it's a benefit?
Yeah. Oh, it's indescribable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's energy level. It's like, I feel like I've regained the use of my body, really. The benefits from it are just, you know, it's just so many of them. I mean, you know, sleep is better, energy is better, all of it, you know. I mean, I can people will see me because I'm an old woman, right? Do you want me to help you carry this or do that? And it's like, no. Okay. I only have to make one trip from the car into the house with my groceries. You know, I don't have to. Yeah, it's night and day. And that's what I wish that especially older women could somehow override the stigma of it and just jump in there and get started, because at no matter what age that you're at, you can experience benefit from it. You don't have to, you know, squat, you know, 2 times your body weight or whatever. Just getting started with it in the beginning, it will give you benefits. Yeah.
For sure. For sure. And I mean, I think it's just, it's one of those things that's hard to explain to people.
It is.
How, because it's like one of these things that it's like every minute of every day, I'm stronger than I was. And it's like every little thing, if you were to add it up and quantify it in some way, it would be like some huge number of the ways that it benefits you, you know, cumulatively over, you know, just even every day, every week, every month.
Yeah. So. I mean, I've never at 72 years old, I'm stronger now than I have ever been in my life. Now if I was powerlifting when I was younger, I may not be able to say that, but I didn't. And so, now at this point, I'm stronger than I ever have been. And I'm kind of interested to just see how far it goes.
Yeah.
We'll see what we can do.
And I mean, it's good to have smart coaches. Like you said, that was like the first thing when Juliet asked about it. Because I do think if you're just doing powerlifting on your own, you're kind of just exploring on YouTube and podcasts and stuff and doing your own programming. In the early days, that is when you're the most vulnerable for injury, yes, because you're pushing, you want to hit PRs and stuff, but your body's just not quite ready for it. And those injuries could probably be more severe, you know, as you get older in age. So it's like, let's make sure you have a good coach, probably more important than a 20-year-old could just, you know, max out in the gym every day and probably be all right.
I was very fortunate. I just, you know, I had Sully, it was kind of a group training. There was 2 or 3 other people there with me at the time, twice a week. And just from the ground up, I was taught the basics, of everything. And in a slow, methodical, linear fashion. And I was just able to gradually get stronger and learn the lifts. I'm still learning the lifts. You know, it's not like it's not like the process ends at some point. You know, you continue with it. But I was just very fortunate. So I continued with him twice a week for almost a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then I really wanted more. I had a sense that I needed to be training more frequently. Plus, Sully's gym was like an hour away from me. It was just becoming it was becoming impossible to get over there. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started with online with Andy Baker, who was also the co-author. He did the programming part of the Barbell Prescription So and started out in his he has a barbell club, a Facebook group, started in that. And then after a bit, one-on-one coaching online, you know, because he's in Houston. And you know, I was just very fortunate again. I mean, he's a phenomenal strength coach. And we've been able to really get me strong. So,
for sure, to say the least.
Yeah.
So then was he the one that convinced you to do your first like sanctioned powerlifting meet, or when did that happen?
No, the way that happened, this was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And one of the gyms that I went to, I met Gina Hensley. I don't know if... Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was a junior world champion. And then she's now she's like now the meet director for USAPL in Michigan.
Okay.
But at that time when I met her, she was not, but we went to the same gym. So I met her there, and she she kind of, I feel like she was kind of a mentor for me for a while. You know, I learned how to put on knee sleeves from Gina, you know, and I think it was and through her that I decided to try a USAPL meet, the Rookie Rumble. And that was, uh-huh. That was my first one. And I was hooked. Yeah. I was hooked after that. Yeah.
And you took home 2 gold medals, it looks like, M3 and Open.
Yeah.
So, you know, right from the start, like I said, you're undefeated. But I find it amazing that you mentioned again, like, here's this sort of, you know, fork in the road moment. You start going to a different gym and suddenly you meet this person, Gina. And who knows if she never comes along, you don't never meet her. Maybe you never do powerlifting meet and you just get super strong. Maybe you get into bodybuilding or strongman or something. Yeah. And then the same thing, you know, with your colleague, Dr. Sully, that you met, sort of like, if you didn't happen to just ask a couple questions and follow up, how your life could be so much different right now, you know, totally. Like, so like this one person can make such a huge impact in the trajectory of your life. That's how so many people's stories are that we've talked to on the podcast.
And it's sad too, because powerlifting, it's a small thing. Mm-hmm. It's not, I would never have known, never.
Yeah.
It's just really, I was just luck in the right place at the right time and encountered the right people. So,
yeah, it's a crazy world. Thank goodness.
You said powerlifting.
Oh, go ahead, Julia. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, you said powerlifting is a small community and niche, you know, it's pretty tiny. It's actually grown pretty exponentially since like 2015. I know you've been in it since like 2019. What do you think of the changes that have happened in the sport? And
The USAPL IPF divorce was tough. Mm-hmm. It was that really was. I was kind of drifting there for a short period of time. I did have an opportunity. I could have gone to Worlds, but I didn't have a passport at the time. It was going to take too long. It was right when the pandemic hit. I was lost. Then the Virginia Pro, happened, which was a fantastic meet. There will never be another meet like that. I came this close to beating Anthony Harris because of the way it was set up, you know. Mm-hmm. I finally was able to get my deadlift. If I was as strong then as I am now, I would have beat him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it was so much fun. It was just a phenomenal meet. But yeah, I didn't, you know, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was just really sad that, you know, that the politics had to happen like that. It still saddens me. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I mean, it was a difficult time for all of us. I was in the same exact boat too, of like, what's going to happen. And, we all, you know, most of us at Power of Teen America came from USAPL. So it's, we all have a soft spot in our hearts for everything related to it. But you like really, I mean, you've done a lot of, you've been on all the biggest stages. I mean, other than Sheffield, you know, you've done the Arnold, you've done the Virginia Pro, the first Virginia Pro, you know, which was really big and really a big deal.
It was.
You've been on the Masters of Iron and Arnold. You've done, you know, nationals in 2 different federations and 1 national championships in 2 different federations. And then, of course, you've been to Worlds. So, I mean, but as far as what Julie was asking, like, you know, we're seeing changes, like the Virginia Pro is a good example where that kind of like was a catalyst meet, I think, that kind of pushed the sport forward and showed us what is possible, that there's something more possible than like just a meet in a gym ironically, that was in a huge gym, but, you know, I mean, in a gym, and then, you know, you kind of see the evolution of that with Sheffield happening, which Sheffield was supposed to happen back in 2020 before COVID ever, you know, before COVID happened, but we're kind of seeing the sport level up and level up again and level up again. And then, you know, you were at the Worlds in Canada, which was a really nice production, really well done. So yeah. So just tell us about, you know, these changes that you've seen and where you think it's going.
You know, I'm just excited for the Masters lifters, really. And I think, I think PA has, you know, you guys have really kind of put us out there, and IPF too, in a way that wasn't happening before, which I really appreciate. Yeah. You know, I mean, my loyalty is there for that. It's, I think that's an important aspect of it. I heard on another podcast, which I won't mention which one, that Masters lifters are important. Why? Because they stay after in meets and they help out with, and they referee and, you know, they help with the logistics of it. And I was like, but you know what? We lift too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're just as every bit of an athlete as anyone else.
Yeah.
So with your kind of stubborn, competitive mindset, are you like never going to ref, never help out after you get done lifting?
Well, actually, I was a referee for USAPL. Okay. And I was able to ref one meet, you know, and then the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see.
You can be like grandfathered in to being a referee if you have USAPL credentials and stuff like that, just FYI. But no, I think it's funny, just sort of like your attitude has always been like, if someone says something, like you're gonna show them wrong and just finish your last deadlift and drop the mic and walk away.
That's right.
And you're like, I'm not helping with anything. I helped by lifting yesterday and giving you guys a hell of a performance. And so yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to go too crazy long with you. I know you're busy. I want to just kind of, let's get people totally caught up to speed with, you know, the last year for you. So talk us a little bit about Nationals last year. It was a similar situation as you were describing before with your game day coach. You know, like how did you find your game day coach? I know you were coached by Susie that day and how that all came together. And then, you know, tell us about the performance, like what happened with your deadlifts and stuff at Nationals last year.
Well, I mean, I had to do sumo, and it was, you know, basically a new lift for me. And it certainly was not one of my best performances at all, but, you know, I got the first one.
Yep.
So that was that. Yeah. Susie, that was great. Yeah, that was a really unique experience for me. She's amazing.
And that was kind of a last minute thing as well, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. And she, you know, she was able to, you know, she was able to include me. I didn't need as much attention as some of her other lifters, which was good, but yeah, that was quite unique to be, to have her in my corner. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I remember you coming in and I don't know if you were saying that you didn't have, or you were trying to get Susie or something like that, but I know it was kind of like a little bit of a last minute thing. And Susie was had other lifters and she was running back and forth because there was actually, I believe there was at least two platforms going on when you were lifting, maybe three. I know there were three platforms, but I'm not sure if it was during your session. Well, and I remember seeing Susie just like running back and forth. Yeah.
What a trooper. She was able to include me. You know, Sam, she coaches Sam Calhoun. Yeah. So, and Sam was not able to be at that. I guess, I don't know. I think maybe because the USAPL thing, I'm not sure why she was not able to be there at that time. So, you know, she referred me to Susie, and Susie was really, yeah, very busy, but she was able to kind of include me in her group. So that was really special for me. Yeah.
Well, now it makes sense because I remember following your training up to nationals and really trying to feature you as one of the star lifters that was going to be at this meet and everything. And everything was going great with your lifting and everything as far as I could see, but I didn't realize that you had to switch to sumo. And I do remember seeing your opener on deadlift and having it be like a little slow, I think. And then seeing your second one, which I think you locked it out and everything, but they got you for a hitch or something, or up and down or something. Is that right?
Yeah. It was like an up and down thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had the strength for it, but it was kind of a technique.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like I said, sumo is hard. You know, it's not an easier lift. It's very technical. Then when I had to go back to conventional, I don't know, I think it might've just been a relief that I didn't have to do sumo anymore. I'm not sure, but right now I'm just kind of keeping my fingers crossed and hoping, but you know what? I think there's benefits to both. And at some point in time, I could actually see myself training both, maybe sumo as an accessory lifts or something, or a secondary day, but yeah, I could see it.
Yeah, for sure. And then like at that meet, your total had gone down. You know, you had done, so you totaled 312 and a half, you had totaled 316 and 322 and a half in the past. How was that like mentally? Because I remember seeing you seemed like totally fine. Other than, I mean, you missed two deadlifts and you weren't happy. You weren't like enthusiastic about it by any means, but you didn't seem like you were like walk away crying or like feeling bad for yourself or anything. Well, you won a national title. Yeah.
No, I qualified for that was the goal.
Yeah.
Now the fact that my total went down, I was not real happy about that. Matter of fact, I don't really have goals in terms of, I want to bench 200. I want to deadlift 400. I want to squat 300. I don't have numbers in my head like that, but I would like each meet to see my total increase.
Yeah.
Doggone it. Even if it's a chip, I would rather, have my total continue to increase. So, yeah.
I mean, I have to just think like the mental anguish of it has to be a little more when you're an M4 than when you're like in the open or a junior or something like this, you know, because I think they think no matter what happens, I'm always going to keep getting stronger and stronger as I go. Do you have any kind of doubts or anything when you walked away, or were you just like, nope, I'm right back in the gym and just, you know, pushing on?
Oh yeah. I had no doubts.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that I was going to have to build up that deadlift, you know, it was it was new. I just had a lot of work to do on it. Really. I just focused on that part. Yeah. That's no, cool. There was no doubts.
And I mean, you turned around and 4 months later, PR'd your total, broke the world record in every discipline, total, won the world championship, best lifter, all the accolades we've mentioned. But that's a quick turnaround, only 4 months. And to be going through this thing where you missed two deadlifts and, you know, otherwise going up to that point, you were 5 for 5 at the meet in Orlando nationals last year, but only a 4 month turnaround. How did you get things straightened out? You ended up, you know, going 8 for 9, only missing one squat and not missing any deadlifts. So what happened in those 4 months that turned things around?
Oh, I don't know. I just, you know, I just, I just keep at it each time. I just, you know.
Yeah. You didn't overthink it, it sounds like.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's just, that's one of the nice things about powerlifting is, you know, you can't really get anxious about the overall picture. At the time, it's just, you know, you have heavy weight on your back and that's really all that you can think about, you know, and you just go from, from, you know, even each training day, just from one lift to the next. And I kind of like that perspective. So I try not to zoom out too much, you know, I just kind of keep my head to the grindstone and just keep plugging along. Yep.
I love that mentality. That's a champion mentality right there. I mean, and I think it's just so interesting that you never did any sports with this attitude that you have. I mean, this is a very, like, people miss one lift and totally get in their head, second guess, question their whole life after, you know, oh, my total went down, or maybe I'm never going to get stronger again. And you're just like, nope, I'm just keep putting one foot in front of the other. That is what the best athletes do. You know, it's like you have adversity and you just keep pushing through it. And then you just, you know, keep going. And it's more about persistence and will than it is, you know, about any of the specific details of your training or anything like that.
Yeah. No, it's just, I think the consistency is the big part. You just, and even when I had, you know, the injuries, knock on wood, you know, somehow they weren't devastating ones, but at the time, yeah, like with the bicep thing, you had visions of shoulder replacement and rotator cuff and, you know, all the worst scenarios get into your head. Yeah. But overriding all of that, I knew that I had to just keep moving. That's the most important thing. And, you know, that somehow carried me through, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. So a couple last questions about Worlds from last year.
Yeah.
Going up to Canada. I mean, what did it feel like just putting on the USA singlet and being on the team and all that kind of stuff?
Well, the USA singlet, I couldn't do the SBD one.
Oh.
Because they wouldn't let me wear my ins or knee sleeves. And I had to.
I think some people just broke that rule.
No, I couldn't do it. I felt like I would have all kinds of bad karma being zoomed in on me. Because, you know,
that's right.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. So I went with another singlet, another USA singlet, not SBD. But
the A7, right? You were in the
A7.
Right?
A7. Yeah, A7. Yeah.
And it looks good.
So I could wear my ins or knee sleeves.
Okay. So, but then, I mean, you know, how was it otherwise, like just being there representing your country and, like, you know, you always had these thoughts of going to Worlds and stuff.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. Everybody was, you know, the whole team, Bill and Miriam. I mean, it was a very special time. It really was.
Yeah. We got to give shout out Bill Helmick.
Yeah.
Bill Helmick was a head coach. Miriam Elm was an assistant coach. They do so much work, and the Masters team is so big.
Yeah.
There is a lot of moving parts. And there's a lot of coordination. A lot of stuff goes on behind the scenes. Those two handle business big time.
Oh yeah. I mean, they just a phenomenal job at handling everything. It was, you know, it was just a lot of fun. It really was. I mean, it was intense, but it was also just a lot of fun. You know, it's just, to be able to be there and be on the team and, you know, the podium, it was really nice.
Yeah. So tell us about that. When they played the national anthem for you,
it's
up there on
not
that
to cry. Yeah, I know. It's, yeah, it's pretty intense. Yeah. I don't think I did tear up, but I don't think I bawled or anything, but yeah, it was really a special moment.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something that you have been thinking of for a long time, and then kind of be kind of weird. Like, did it sink in right away? Like when you're up there, or, you know, I just imagine like, it's like one of these like lifelong, or in your case, however long goal, you know, and then to have it fulfilled and they're playing the national anthem and all that, it has to just be crazy.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I just felt very, very proud, and you know, it was just very fortunate to be able to be there. It was very cool.
And did it feel like you were on a team that like you were there with Team USA. I know you're probably friends with people from other countries and stuff too, but
yes, no, absolutely. It was, I think being a part of that and being a team was also just a really important aspect of it. Yeah. It was very cool.
Especially like you're someone that trains pretty much mostly alone. You're yep. training in your home gym and everything like that. So just getting out there and just being with all the other lifters, like going out to dinner and stuff, I imagine it was just a blast.
It was.
Cool. All right. So Julia, do you have any other questions for, one last thing I want to, or do you have any questions, Julia, about Worlds or anything, winning best lifter, going undefeated, any of that kind of stuff?
Oh, no, I thought it was funny when you said you want to improve your total,
a chip at a time,
anything, even if it's a chip. And you actually chipped the world record. So you had 325.5. So you did get that chip in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not gonna leave those chips.
Yeah. As they say, yeah, it looks like you took it on bench. So, cool. And who was handling you? Was it Bill?
Yeah. Bill?
All right. Cool. Bill, our man. Bill is one of the nicest guys in the sport.
Super nice.
And just, you know, has done so much for the sport as well. Like, some people may not know who Bill Helmick is, but he's done so much for Powerlifting America, so much for the sport in years past, so much for the Masters athletes in particular, being a master himself. He's actually an M5.
Wow.
Which they don't have that category yet in the IPF. But they better make one because Shelly eventually will be an M5.
I will.
And she's coming for all the gold and all the gold medals and all the world records.
Yeah.
But and also, you know, you talked about your total. Your total has gone up 40 kilos since that's you started. Cool. I mean, that's huge. And I mean, you were 68 in your first meet. Yeah. So for people
just
out there.
Just think if I would have discovered this, you know, like 50 years ago.
You'd be a real problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I mean, just for people who think that, you know, you can't get stronger at your age. I mean, if 68 is your first meet, you've in just 3 years here, you've put 40 kilos on your total. I mean, that's a big amount. I mean, that's what you expect from people in all age groups, you know, open, juniors, all of them to make this kind of progress. Yeah. So it can be done.
And the myth, unfortunately, out there is, you know, you can't do that when you get older. It's just all downhill, you know, which is just not true. It's just not true. I was able to stop that muscle loss, that sarcopenia, and actually put muscle on, you know, and again, I'm not, you know, I think this is something that's possible for just about anybody to do that. You know, as long as the thing is, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not, sometimes it's not even fun. You know, it's hard work. And, I think once you're able to take the step and do it, then yeah, you can benefit from it. And you know, all the stigma and all the previous belief that, well, you know, it's all over and done with, it's all downhill once you can't put muscle on, it's just not true. You know, at least for me anyways. So
no, you're walking proof, living proof, huge inspiration for anyone that sees you. I mean, like I said, I mean, your arms are jacked right now. They're popping out of your sleeves. And I saw you in person last year and you're jacked. I mean, there's no question about it. And it's cool to see. I mean, and like you said, you're not like a genetic freak or like an athletic outlier or anything like this who's like super doing sports your whole life and just happened to pick up powerlifting when you're late, but you're already super strong. You weren't strong and you hadn't done really much of anything as far as you know, physical fitness stuff. And so I think that's why your story is like resonates so much with people, is because it's like you said, if you can do it, anyone can.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. So we'll, I got some quick hitters for you. Unless Julia has anything else, and then we'll wrap this up.
Go right ahead.
All right. So what is your day job?
I am a psychiatrist. And I work, it's emergency room psychiatry. Actually, I work in a crisis center, which is, a psychiatric emergency room, part of a general emergency room department. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So just more proof that powerlifting is not just meatheads. We've got psychiatrists, people working in emergency rooms, doctors, all different types of people in powerlifting. So, it's cool. I always like to ask that question just for that reason, to show like we have a real diversity of people in powerlifting, from all walks of life. So, where do you train?
Where do I train?
Yeah.
What, to be a psychiatrist?
No. For powerlifting.
We already mentioned it
in your basement.
In my basement. It's like when the pandemic hit, I was so fortunate. For some reason, I figured this is not going to be good. So I rushed out and over to the, there's an American Fitness store they have like home fitness equipment that's a few blocks away from me. I zoomed over there really fast and was able to get a squat rack. It was a really crummy one. I didn't care. A squat rack and, I had a barbell and some weights and just enough to where I could continue training off the floor. And I happened to get there just before a whole crowd of people, came into that store and bought everything. Off the floor. So I was fortunate that I was able to get that squat rack.
Wow.
And it's, the pandemic really forced me, because I mean, what was I going to do? I panicked, and it's like, I had to continue to train. I didn't have an option. So I was able to, and it's something I had thought about, but I don't know if I was going to be honest with myself, if it wasn't for the pandemic, I really ever would have taken the plunge and, set up a gym in my home, which I now have, and I'm really happy there. So.
Yeah. I was lucky that I had one, had a garage gym and stuff, like had been building it before the pandemic. And then it came in handy with having some of the boys from the gym come over and being able to get their training in, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you guys aren't following Shelly already, it's Shelly_Ann_28. You will see her doing pull-ups, squat, bench, deadlift, all this stuff in her basement, training all the time. And she posts a lot of I think you're posting all of your training now going into the national.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Another question. Where did you grow up?
In Lubbock, Texas.
Lubbock. Okay. Yep. And what was your first sport? It's like acrobatics or something that you were saying.
I mean, we took tap, ballet, and acrobats. Yeah. But in school we had, I never played, I think we played kickball. I was really good at the 100-yard dash. I think it was does that sound like a thing?
Yeah. 100-yard dash. It sounds like, I don't know that much about track. It was 100-meter too.
I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah.
But I was good. I was fast. Nice. I remember that. But yeah, I mean, there was horseback riding, a little bit of that. I mean, it's just, there was no sport that, I really took to. I mean, a little bit of everything.
Well, yeah. I think you and I should have a foot race in Scottsdale and see who's faster.
I don't know if I could do that anymore. Oh.
If I say you can't, what do you say, Julia?
Oh, I used to do track too. It could be all three of us.
All three of us. Yeah. I do remember though, I was pretty fast. Yeah.
Oh, I think I was pretty fast too back in the day. So let's see. If we challenge Shelly to anything, she'll kick our ass. So when you're not powerlifting, what's your idea of a good time? Like if you want to take a vacation from real life, what would you do?
Oh my gosh. And I can't power lift.
Yeah.
No.
No, yeah. Like pretend the world stops and you can just have this fantasy vacation or whatever you would do. And you wouldn't miss any work or miss any training or anything like that. It was just like a timeout. What would you do?
Oh my gosh. I probably would just take a nap. I would have a staycation at home and just you know, hang out and relax and yeah, just no worries. Yeah.
You'll be surprised how common that is the answer for most powerlifters. Because, you know, we're talking to the highest level powers, the world champions, best lifters at world and stuff. And none of them are doing powerlifting as a full-time job. So it's like they're being professional level athletes. Yeah. With all that entails with nutrition and training and coaching and then balancing it with having families, having careers and all this other stuff that I think a lot of us are just like you said, if I could just push pause for 2 days, I'd probably just stay in my house and chill and watch Netflix.
Hang out, yeah. Yeah. Hang out in my backyard. I would just.
All right. So if you are going on vacation somewhere, do you prefer mountains or beaches or neither?
Probably a beach.
Beach. All right, cool. Oh shoot, there's no beaches in Mongolia. You have to
come to the Cayman Islands. I don't know. Mongolia is awful far away. Yeah, I don't.
That's something to think about. Maybe there's still time. They changed where Junior Worlds was last year. Like
I don't know what 4 months out. They have to change it. I heard a rumor about Spain. Is that true?
I have heard nothing. I haven't heard any rumors about this. What I've been hearing is that a lot of masters that would go to Worlds normally are talking about going to the North American Regional Championships in the Cayman Islands.
Cayman Islands would be cool. Yeah. That's definitely there. But Mongolia, to be honest, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Speaking of beaches, Cayman Islands, the North American regionals, it depends on your competition frequency and how comfortable you are competing that often, but you could even work that into going there and going to wherever they end up having Worlds as well, just as a backup. There's some
gotta qualify to get there first, you know. Can't go to Ron Nance and bomb out or anything like that.
Oh, please. I mean,
you know, anything can happen.
Knock on wood, that can't happen. We can't let that happen.
No.
Okay, a couple more here. Do you have any nicknames
for me?
Yeah.
No.
What do people call you?
Doc
or Shelley? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Doc. Okay. Yeah. No one's called you the Terminator before, huh?
No.
Okay, we'll have to make that stick. Who's a person that you look up to in powerlifting or in other strength sports? I know you already mentioned a few, but if you want to mention them again.
Yeah, Sam Calhoun. Yeah, she's just a really solid person, a very nice person who gives a lot. You know, just really, really admire her.
Yeah, she's so dedicated to the sport. She does so much. Yes. Okay. What is your favorite sport to watch?
Probably powerlifting.
Powerlifting. All right. And do you have a favorite football team?
Nope.
Okay. So you don't like football?
No. Back in the day, I watched basketball, but that was probably before you were born. I mean, that was back when. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was Lou Alcindor in the Lakers and all that. Yeah, that was, you know, there was a period of time when I watched all that, but not anymore. No.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard they've had some football teams down in Texas that are decent, but all right. Around in the Lubbock area, but we won't mention them. But if you had to pick a favorite music genre, what's your favorite music genre?
Oh. Gosh, probably a little bit of everything except country western. You know, nice. For some reason I can't. But I think mostly it's right now it's either music when I lift, which is quite different from other times, which would just be classical music. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. All right. And then who is your favorite rapper?
Oh, I don't have one of those. No, I don't know.
Can you name any rappers?
Boozy. What's her? Boozy.
Boozy Badass?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to put that on all your reels.
I have a question, actually. So I was trained classically in piano and violin. So who's your favorite classical music composer?
I
don't know. Bach, Vivaldi, probably like Mozart, just the classic stuff. Just background music really for me, but
gotcha. Yeah. And when you're lifting, you're listening to classic or no? You listen to
no. What were... No, I listen to probably Turbo, the music station, Sirius music station. And then I have a playlist.
Is it on Spotify?
Yep.
You got to share it on your.
No. I mean, it's not. Oh, well, I wouldn't know how to do that. I mean, I have a playlist, but it's not a public playlist.
Okay.
But there's a lot of Parkway Drive in there that I'm listening to lately. So.
All right, I'm going to check out who these people are. All right. What's that?
The Bottom Feeder is my song at the time for deadlifts. Yeah.
I'm writing this down.
Okay.
All right.
Check it out.
What is your favorite movie genre?
Probably documentaries right now. Yeah.
Oh, which ones have you? I love documentaries as well. Which ones are you watching?
I would say the most recent ones that I've watched, something about an octopus, the octopus teacher.
Oh, wow.
And there's another one, animals, naturally. Let's see, something about stray dogs in Istanbul. There's a called Stray. That's a real good one. And then, of course, the Beatles. There was a Beatles documentary, which was very long in 5 parts, but it was really good. So
were you a fan of the Beatles
back in the day? Yeah.
Was it like everyone was Beatles crazy when they
absolutely
first started, right?
Yep.
And you're one of them?
Yeah. My favorite album, Revolver.
Oh yeah.
If you remember that one.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I can remember
when actually, my mother was the one that turned me on to the Beatles. We were in the car and the radio was on and I Want to Hold Your Hand came on. It was like one of their first ones. And she asked me, did you know about them? And that's how I learned about it.
How old do you think you were at that time?
I don't know. 15, 16 years old.
Okay. So
maybe 14, 15.
That's probably the age where parents are starting to learn music trends from their kids and stuff. So that's probably why. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. We jumped from them to the Doors and Jimi Hendrix. I don't know how that happened, but
that's what you like. Okay. Right.
Well, back in the, yeah. Growing up.
That's awesome. I think everybody universally likes the Beatles, the Doors, and Jimi Hendrix. So, all right. Well, Shelly, that's going to be it for the Power of Teen America podcast. Unless Julia, you have any more questions or Shelly, is there anything else that you want to say?
Oh no, I just really appreciate you guys. You do promote us masters lifters, and it's a wonderful thing. You do, and King of the Lifts. And Volt Network and Barbend, just really do a fantastic job.
Yeah, and you're part of the reason why. Like last year, I remember your videos that we made just absolutely blew up. And I remember King of the Lifts posted them, And yeah, they got like over 500,000 views and stuff like this. And so I remember you DM'd me and you said like something like, see, people do care about Masters. Look at the views.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Well, we really appreciate you coming and giving us your time and answering all of our questions and stuff like that. Looking forward to seeing you in just a couple weeks now in Scottsdale. We're like 2 weeks out, less than 2 weeks out.
Yep.
So really exciting. And we'll be rooting for you. And with that, Julia, thank you for coming as well, as always, and asking the questions and everything like that. And with that, thank you to everyone who's tuning in to Power 15 America podcast. And we'll let you go. Thanks again for coming, Shelly and Julia, and catch you all next time. Peace out.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.